morning after Anna Chapel's party, Claire went to the garden for a basket of mint. She was going to start on the food for the Amateur Botanists Association's annual luncheon in Hickory on Friday. Being botanists, they liked the idea of edible flowers. Being a bunch of rich, eccentric old ladies, they paid well and could give a lot of referrals. It was a coup to get the job, but it was a big job, and she was going to have to buck it up and hire someone local to help her serve. The garden was gated by heavy metal fencing, like a Gothic cemetery, and the honeysuckle clinging to it was almost 2 feet thick in some places, completely closing in the place. Even the gate door was covered with honeysuckle vines, and the keyhole was a secret pocket only a few could find. When she entered, she noticed it right away. There, in the cluster of Queen Anne's lace, tiny leaves of ivy were sprouting. Ivy in the garden. Overnight. The garden was saying that something was trying to get in. Something that was pretty and looked harmless, but would take over everything if given the chance. She quickly pulled the ivy out and dug deep for the roots. But then she spied a hairy vine of it sneaking up a lilac bush, and she crawled over to it. In her haste, she hadn't closed the garden gate behind her. And a half hour later, she jerked her head around in surprise when she heard the crunch of footsteps on the gravel pathway that snaked around the flowers. It was Tyler, carrying a cardboard milk box and looking around as if he'd entered someplace enchanted. Everything bloomed here at once, even at a time of year when it wasn't supposed to. He stopped suddenly when his eyes found Claire on her knees, digging up the roots of the ivy under the lilac bush. He gave her a look like he was trying to make her out in the dark. "It's Tyler Hughes," he said, as if she wouldn't recognize him. "From next door?" She nodded. "I remember." He walked over to her. "Apples," he said, crouching beside her and putting the box on the ground. "They fell over the fence. There are at least a dozen here. I didn't know if you use them for your catering, so I thought I'd bring them over. I tried your door, but no one answered." Claire scooted the box away from him as subtly as possible. "I don't use them, but thank you." "You don't like apples?" He shook his head. "Just occasionally. I can't figure out for the life of me how they got in my yard. The tree is too far away." He didn't mention a vision, which relieved her. He must not have eaten one. "Must have been the wind," she said. "You know, the trees on campus don't have mature apples on them at this time of year." "This tree blooms in the winter and produces apples all spring and summer." Tyler stood and stared at the tree. "Impressive." Claire looked over her shoulder at it. The tree was situated toward the back of the lot. It wasn't very tall, but it grew long and sideways. Its limbs stretched out like a dancer's arms, and the apples grew at the very ends, as if holding the fruit in its palms. It was a beautiful old tree, the gray bark wrinkled and molting in places. The only grass in the garden was around the tree, stretching about 10 feet beyond the reach of its branches, giving the old tree its room. Claire didn't know why, but every once in a while the tree would actually throw apples, as if bored. When she was young, her bedroom window looked out over the garden. She would sleep with her window open in the summers, and sometimes she would wake in the morning to find one or two apples on the floor. Claire gave the tree a stern look. Occasionally, that worked, making it behave. "It's just a tree," she said, and turned back to the lilac bush. She resumed pulling at the roots of the ivy. Tyler put his hands in his pockets and watched her work. She'd been working alone in the garden for so many years that she realized she missed having someone there. It reminded her of gardening with her grandmother. It was never meant to be a solitary job. "So, have you lived in Bascom long?" Tyler finally asked. "Almost all my life." "Almost?" "My family is from here. My mother was born here. She left but moved back when I was 6. I've been here ever since." So you are from here? Claire froze. How could he do that? How could he do that with just 5 little words? He just said to her the very thing she'd always wanted to hear. He was getting in without even knowing how he did it. He was the ivy, wasn't he? She very slowly turned her head and looked up at him, his lanky body, his awkward features, his beautiful brown eyes. Yes, she said breathlessly. So, who are your guests? He asked. It took a moment for the words to penetrate. I don't have any guests. As I was coming around the front of the house, someone pulled up to the curb with a car full of boxes and bags. I thought they were moving in. That's strange. Claire stood and took off her gloves. She turned and walked out of the garden, making sure Tyler was following her. She didn't trust the tree alone with him, even if he didn't eat apples. She walked along the driveway, curving beside the house, but then she came to a sudden stop beside the tulip tree in the front yard. Tyler came up behind her, close, and put his hands on her arms as if aware that her legs had turned boneless. More ivy. There was a little girl, about 5 years old, running around the yard with her arms stretched wide like an airplane. A woman was leaning against an old Subaru wagon parked on the street, her arms crossed tightly over her chest, watching the little girl. She looked small, frail, with unwashed light brown hair and deep circles under her eyes. She seemed to be holding herself to keep from trembling. Claire wondered absently if this was how her grandmother felt when her daughter came home after years away, when pregnant Lorelei showed up on her doorstep with a 6-year-old clinging to her leg. This relief, this anger, this sadness, this panic. Finally, making her legs move, she crossed the yard, leaving Tyler behind. Sydney? Sydney pushed herself away from the car quickly, startled. Her eyes went all over Claire before she smiled. That insecure woman with her arms wrapped around her was gone, replaced by the old Sydney, the one who always looked down her nose at her family name, never realizing what a gift it was to have been born here. Hi, Claire. Claire stopped on the sidewalk, a few feet away from her. She could be a ghost, or maybe someone who looked incredibly like Sydney. The Sydney Claire knew would never let her hair look like that. She wouldn't be caught dead wearing a T-shirt with food stains on it. She used to be so meticulous, so put together. She always tried so hard not to look like a Waverly. Where have you been? Everywhere. Sydney smiled that spectacular smile of hers, and suddenly it didn't matter what her hair or clothes looked like. Yes, this was Sydney. The little girl from the yard ran up to Sydney and stood close to her. Sydney put her arm around her. This is my daughter, Bay. Claire looked at the child and managed to smile. She had dark hair, as dark as Claire's, but Sydney's blue eyes. Hello, Bay. And this is? Sydney asked suggestively. Tyler Hughes, he said, extending a hand past Claire. She hadn't realized he'd come up behind her again, and she gave a start. I live over there, next door. Sydney shook Tyler's hand and nodded. The old Sanderson place. It looks good. It wasn't blue the last time I saw it, just a hideous, moldy white. I can't take credit for it. I bought it like that. I'm Sydney Waverly, Claire's sister. Nice to meet you. I'll just be going. Claire, if you need me for anything. He squeezed Claire's shoulder, then left. She was confused. She didn't want him to go. Yet, of course, he couldn't stay. But now she was alone with Sydney and her quiet daughter, and she had no idea what to do. Sydney wagged her eyebrows. He's hot. Waverly, Claire said. What? You said your last name was Waverly.
Last time I checked.
I thought you hated the name. Sydney shrugged noncommittally. What about Bay?
Her name is Waverly, too.
Go play some more, honey, Sydney said, and Bay ran back to the yard.
I can't believe how great the house looks. New paint, new windows, new roof. I never imagined it could look so good.
I used Grandma Waverly's life insurance money to remodel.
Sydney turned away a moment, ostensibly to watch Tyler climb the stairs to his front porch and then walk into his house. She had stiffened, and it occurred to Claire that this was shocking news to Sydney. Had she really expected to find their grandmother here, alive and well? What was she expecting?
When? Sydney asked.
When what?
When did she die?
10 years ago. Christmas Eve, the year you left.
I had no way to contact you. We didn't know where you went.
Grandma knew. I told her.
Say, do you mind if I pull this clunker behind the house?
Sydney knocked on the hood with her fist. It's sort of an embarrassment.
What happened to Grandma's old car, the one she gave you?
I sold it in New York.
Grandma said I could sell it if I wanted to.
So that's where you've been?
New York?
No, I only stayed there for a year.
I've been around, just like Mom.
They locked eyes, and suddenly everything was quiet.
What are you doing here, Sydney?
I need a place to stay.
For how long?
Sydney took a deep breath.
I don't know.
You can't leave Bay here.
What?
Like Mom left us here, you can't leave her here.
I would never leave my daughter,
Sydney exclaimed, a touch of hysteria tinging her words, and Claire was suddenly aware of all that wasn't being said, of the story Sydney wasn't telling. Something big had to have happened to bring Sydney back here.
What do you want me to do, Claire? Beg?
No, I don't want you to beg.
I don't have anywhere else to go, Sydney said, forcing the words out like spitting sunflower seed shells to the sidewalk where they stuck and baked in the sun, getting harder and harder. What was Claire supposed to do? Sydney was family. Claire had learned the hard way that you weren't supposed to take them for granted. She'd also learned they could hurt you more than anyone else in the world.
This is the end of disc number one. Please insert disc number two. This is disc number two.
What was Claire supposed to do? Sydney was family. Claire had learned the hard way that you weren't supposed to take them for granted. She'd also learned they could hurt you more than anyone else in the world.
Have you had breakfast yet?
No.
I'll meet you in the kitchen.
Come on, Bay. I'm pulling the car around back, Sydney called, and Bay ran to her mother.
Bay, do you like strawberry Pop-Tarts? Claire asked.
Bay smiled, and it was Sydney's smile made over. It almost hurt Claire to look at, remembering all the things she wished she could take back from when Sydney was a child, like chasing Sydney out of the garden when she wanted to see what Claire and their grandmother were doing, and hiding recipes on high shelves so Sydney would never know their secrets. Claire had always wondered if she was the one who made Sydney hate being a Waverly. Was this child going to hate everything Waverly, too? Bay didn't know it, but she had a gift. Maybe Claire could teach her to use it. Claire didn't know if she and Sydney would ever reconcile, or even how long she was going to stay, but maybe she could try to make up for what she'd done with Bay. In mere minutes, Claire's life had changed. Her grandmother had taken in Claire and Sydney. Claire would do the same for Sydney and Bay. No questions asked. It's what a true Waverly did.
Pop-Tarts are my favorite, Bay said.
Sydney looked startled. How did you know?
I didn't, Claire said, turning toward the house. Even Elle did.
Sidney parked the Subaru beside a white minivan at the back of the house, in front of the detached garage. Bay hopped out, but Sidney got out a little slower. She took her tote bag and Bay's backpack. Then she went around to the back of the car and unscrewed the Washington State license plate. She stuffed it into her bag. There. No clues as to where they'd been. Bay was standing in the driveway that separated the house from the garden.
"This is really where we're going to live?"
she asked, for about the 16th time since they'd pulled in front of the house that morning. Sidney took a deep breath. God, she couldn't believe it. "Yes."
"It's a princess house."
She turned and pointed to the open gate.
"Can I go see the flowers?"
"No, those are Claire's flowers." She heard a thud and watched an apple roll out of the garden and stop at her feet. She stared at it for a moment. No one in her family ever found anything odd about having a tree that told the future and threw apples at people. Still, it was a better welcome than Claire had given her. She kicked the apple back into the garden. "And stay away from the apple tree."
"I don't like apples."
Sidney went to her knees in front of Bay. She pushed the little girl's hair behind her ears and straightened her shirt. "Okay. What's your name?"
"Bay Waverly."
"And where were you born?"
"On a Greyhound bus."
"Who is your father?"
"I don't know who he is."
"Where are you from?"
"Everywhere."
She took her daughter's hands. "You understand why you have to say these things, don't you?"
"Because we're different here. We're not who we were."
"You amaze me."
"Thank you. Do you think Claire will like me?"
Sidney stood, then took a moment to steady herself when dark spots appeared in front of her eyes and the world tilted off its axis for a moment. Her skin felt prickled, as if with goosebumps, and it hurt to blink. She was so tired she could hardly walk, but she couldn't let Bay see her like that, and she certainly couldn't let Claire see her like that. She managed to smile. She'd be crazy not to.
"I like her. She's like Snow White."
They walked into the kitchen through the sunroom, and Sidney looked around in awe. The kitchen had been remodeled, taking over most of what had been the dining room beside it. It was all stainless steel and efficiency, and there were two commercial refrigerators and two ovens. They wordlessly went to the kitchen table and sat, watching Claire put on coffee and then slide two Pop-Tarts into the toaster. Claire had changed. Not in big ways, but small ones, like the way light changed throughout the day. A different slant, a different hue. She carried herself differently. She no longer had that greedy, selfish way about her. She seemed comfortable, the way their grandmother used to seem comfortable. "Don't move me and I'll be fine," comfortable. Watching her, it suddenly occurred to Sidney that Claire was beautiful. Sidney had never realized her sister was so beautiful. The man she was with earlier, the man from next door, thought so too. He was clearly attracted to Claire. And Bay was captivated by her, not taking her eyes off her, even when Claire put warm Pop-Tarts and a glass of milk on the table in front of her. "So, you run a catering company?" Sidney finally asked when Claire handed her a cup of coffee. "I saw the van." "Yes," Claire said, turning away in a swish of mint and lilac. Her hair was longer than it used to be, and it veiled her shoulders like a shawl. She used it for protection. If there was one thing Sidney knew, it was hair. She loved beauty school and loved working in the salon in Boise. Hair said more about people than they knew, and Sidney understood the language naturally. It had surprised her that some other girls at beauty school thought it was hard. To Sidney, it was second nature. It always had been. She didn't have the energy to keep talking to Claire when Claire was making it so difficult, so she took a sip of the coffee and found it had cinnamon in it, just like Grandma Waverly used to make it. She wanted to drink more, but her hands started shaking and she had to set the cup down. When was the last time she'd slept? She'd made sure Bay slept, but she was too scared to sleep more than small pockets at a time at rest stops and Walmart parking lots along the way. Miles of highway ran on a permanent loop in her mind, and she still felt the hum of the road in her bones. It had taken them 10 days, surviving on the food she'd packed, white bread and ginger snaps and cheap packages of peanut butter and crackers, the ones where the peanut butter tasted oily and the crackers crumbled at the touch. She wasn't sure she could last much longer before she broke down in tears. "Come on, Bay," Sydney said the moment Bay finished her breakfast. "Let's go upstairs." "I left new sheets from Evenell on the beds," Claire said.
"Which room?"
"Your room is still your room. Bay can sleep in my old room. I sleep in Grandma's now," she said, her back to them, as she began to bring down large canisters of flour and sugar from the cabinets. Sydney led Bay straight to the staircase, not looking around, because she was disoriented enough and didn't want to discover what else had changed. Bay ran up the stairs ahead of her and waited, smiling. It was worth it. All this was worth it, just to see her child like this. Sydney led her to Claire's old room first. The furniture was different, mismatched. The sewing table used to be in the sitting room downstairs, and the bed used to be in their grandmother's room. Bay ran to the window.
"I like this room."
"Your Aunt Claire used to spend hours at that window, staring out at the garden. You can sleep with me if you want to. My room has a view of the blue house next door."
"Maybe."
"I'm going to start bringing in our things. Come with me." Bay looked up at her hopefully.
"Can I stay up here?"
She was too tired to argue. "Don't leave this room. If you want to go exploring, we'll do it together." Sydney left Bay, but instead of going downstairs to get the boxes and bags left in the car, she walked to her old room. When she was young, she spent a lot of time by herself in her room, sometimes imagining that she was trapped there by her evil sister, like in a fairy tale. For 2 years after her mother left, Sydney even slept with sheets tied into a rope under her bed so she could crawl out the window when her mother came back to save her. But then she grew older and wiser and realized her mother wasn't coming back. She also realized that her mother had the right idea by leaving in the first place. Sydney couldn't wait to leave, to follow her boyfriend, Hunter John Madison, to college, because they were going to be in love forever, and even if they came back to Bascom, it would be okay because he had never treated her like a Waverly. Not until the very end, at least. She took a deep breath and entered the room reverently, a church of old memories. Her bed and dresser were still there. The full-length mirror still had some of her old stickers on it. She opened the closet and found a stack of boxes full of old linen that mice had gotten into. But the room didn't have an air of neglect. There wasn't any dust, and it smelled old and familiar, like cloves and cedar. Claire had taken care of it, hadn't turned it into a sitting room or filled it full of things she didn't need or use anymore, or taken Sydney's old furniture out. That did it. Sydney went to the edge of the bed and sat. She put a hand over her mouth as she cried so Bay, singing quietly in the next room, wouldn't hear. 10 days on the road. She needed a bath. Claire looked prettier and cleaner than she did. Grandma Waverly was gone. Bay liked it here, but she didn't yet realize what being a Waverly meant. What was David doing? Did she leave behind any clues? So much had changed, but her room was exactly like she'd left it. She crawled to the pillow at the top of the bed and curled into a small ball. She was asleep seconds later. Chapter 3. There was an art to the male posterior. That's all there was to it. Well, that was most of it. The young runners on the university track had such verve and tone and, probably best of all, if Evenell ever felt the need to give them something, she could never catch them. Obviously, her gift knew that and never decided to kick in at the track during the school year. But in the summer, there were slower, older people on the track, and sometimes Evenell had to give them little packets of ketchup and tweezers. She even had to give one old woman a jar of sourwood honey one day. They gave her strange looks on the track in the summer. That morning, instead of going to the track, Evenell decided to walk downtown before the shops opened. There were always runners around the square. She followed a few of them until she came to Fred's Gourmet Grocery and happened to look in the window. It was well before he normally showed up for work, but there was Fred in his stocking feet getting a container of yogurt out of the dairy section. His rumpled clothing was an obvious indication that he'd spent the night there. Evenell supposed the rose geranium wine didn't work on James. Or maybe Fred decided not to use it after all. Sometimes people who had been together for a long time got to imagining that things used to be better, even when they weren't. Memories, even hard memories, grew soft like peaches as they got older. Fred and James were a steadfast couple. Everyone knew that. The fact that they were gay had been overlooked a long time ago, when it was obvious they were one of the always-togethers, a distinction usually reserved for very old couples. She knew Fred. She knew that what people thought was important to him. He was a lot like his father that way, though he'd never admit it. Once someone told him something critical, he would hold on to it for a long time, change everything he did just so he wouldn't face the same criticism again. He would hate for anyone to know that he and James were having problems. He was an always together. He had so many expectations to live up to. She knew she should leave, but she decided to wait for a moment to see if her gift would kick in. She stared at him, but nothing occurred to her. She had nothing to give him but advice, and most people weren't inclined to take that too seriously. Evenell was neither as mysterious nor as clever as her Waverly relatives who had always lived in the Queen Anne home on Pendland Street, but she did have the gift of anticipation. From the time she was a little girl, she brought her mother dishcloths before the milk was spilled. She closed the windows before there was even a hint of a storm, and she gave the preacher a cough drop before he had a coughing spell during the sermon. Evenell had been married once, a long time ago. The first time she met her husband, they were 6 years old, and she gave him a small black stone she'd found on the road that day. That night he used it to tap on her window to get her attention, and they became the best of friends. After 38 years of marriage, and not once feeling the need to give him something again, she was seized with the need to buy her husband a new suit. It turned out to be because he didn't have a decent one to be buried in when he died the following week. She tried not to think too hard about her gift, because then she would think about how frustrating it was not to know why people needed the things. Sometimes at night, when her house felt particularly empty, she still wondered what would have happened if she hadn't bought her husband that suit. She watched Fred go to the picnic supply aisle and open a box of plastic utensils. He took out a plastic spoon and opened his cup of yogurt. She really should be moving on. But then she got to thinking about how nice it would be to live in a grocery store, or better yet, a Walmart, or better still, a mall, because they had beds in the linen departments of the stores and a big food court. She suddenly realized that Fred had stopped short, the plastic spoon in his mouth, and he was looking back at her through the window. She smiled and gave him a little wave. He walked to the door and unlocked it. "Can I help you with something, Evenell?" he said, stepping outside. "Nope. I was just passing by when I saw you." "Is there something you want to give me?" he asked. "Nope." "Oh," he said, as if he really wanted something, something that would make everything all better. But relationships were hard. There was no cure for them. He looked around to see if anyone on the street had seen them, Then he leaned forward and whispered, "I've asked him to be home early for the past 2 nights, and the past 2 nights he hasn't come home at all. I don't know what to do with my time at home when he's not there, Evenell. He's always so good at making the decisions. Last night I couldn't even figure out what time I should eat. If I ate too early and he came home, then I couldn't eat with him. But if I waited too long, it would be too late to eat. At around 2 o'clock this morning, I figured I should get things ready to fix breakfast in case he came in. That would be a nice gesture, right? I came here to pick some things up, but James usually leaves me a grocery list, so when I got here, I wasn't sure what to get. I kept thinking, what if he doesn't want grapefruit? And what if I brought home coffee beans he doesn't like? I ended up falling asleep on the couch in my office. I don't know what I'm doing."
Evenell shook her head. "You're putting it off is what you're doing. When you have to do something, you have to do it. Putting it off only makes it worse. Believe me, I know."
"I'm trying," Fred said. "I bought rose geranium wine from Claire."
"What I'm saying is you have to talk to him. Don't wait for him to come home. Call him and ask the serious questions. Stop putting it off."
Fred got a stubborn look to him. And Evenell laughed.
"Okay, you're not ready for that. Maybe the wine will work if you can get him to drink it. But no matter what you decide to do, you should probably do it with shoes on."
Fred looked down at his stocking feet, horrified, and hurried back into the store. With a sigh, Evenell walked up the sidewalk, looking in windows. Most of the morning joggers were gone, so maybe she would just go home and clean up before she went to visit Sydney. Claire was a little panicked, though she tried to hide it when she called Evenell last night to tell her about Sydney's arrival. Evenell calmed her down and told her everything was going to be all right. She reminded Claire that coming home was a good thing. Home was home. Evenell passed the White Door Salon, where women with too much time on their hands and too much money in their purses paid way too much for haircuts and hot stone massages. Then she stopped in front of Maxine's next door, the posh clothing shop that the women from the White Door liked to shop in after their hair was done. There in the window was a button-down silk shirt. She walked in, even though they hadn't put out the open sign yet. Her gift was like an itch, like a mosquito bite in the center of her body, and it wouldn't go away until she did what it demanded. And it suddenly, insistently, demanded that she buy Sydney that shirt. Sydney woke up with a start and checked her watch. She hadn't meant to fall asleep. She stumbled to the bathroom and drank water from the sink, then she splashed her face. She left the bathroom and stopped to check in on Bay, but Bay wasn't in her room. Her bed was made, though, and some of her favorite stuffed animals were sitting on the pillows. She checked all the rooms upstairs, then jogged downstairs, trying to stave off panic. Where did she go? Sydney walked into the kitchen and froze. She'd just walked into heaven. And her grandmother was right there in every scent. Sugary and sweet, herby and sharp, yeasty and fresh. Grandma Waverly used to cook like this. When Sydney was young, Claire always found a way to run Sydney out of the kitchen, so Sydney would sit in the hallway outside the kitchen and listen to the bubble of sauce boiling, the sizzle of things in skillets, the rattle of pans, the mumble of Claire and Grandma Waverly's voices. There were two big bowls, one full of lavender and one full of dandelion greens, on the stainless steel island. Loaves of bread sat steaming on the counters. Bay stood on a chair by Claire at the far counter, and she was using a wood-handled artist's brush to carefully paint pansy flowers with egg whites. One by one, Claire then took the flower heads and delicately dipped them in extra fine sugar before setting them on a cookie sheet. "How did you manage this in just a couple of hours?" Sydney said incredulously. And Claire and Bay both turned. "Hi," Claire said, looking at her warily. "How do you feel?"
"I'm fine. I just needed a little nap."
Bay jumped down from her chair and ran to Sydney and hugged her. She was wearing a blue apron that dragged on the ground and had Waverly's Catering written on it in white.
"I'm helping Claire crystallize pansies to put on top of custard cups. Come look!"
She ran back to her chair by the counter. "Maybe later, honey. Let's go get her things from the car and let Claire do her work."
"Bay and I brought everything in yesterday," Claire said.
Sydney looked at her watch again. "What are you talking about? I was only asleep 2 hours."
"You arrived yesterday morning. You've been asleep for the past 26 hours."
Sydney's heart lodged in her throat, and she stumbled to the kitchen table and sat. She'd left her daughter alone for 26 hours? Did Bay say anything to Claire about David? Did Claire care for Bay? Did she tuck her in, or had Bay been huddled, afraid and lonely in a room all night in a strange house?
"Bay has been helping me," Claire said. "She doesn't say much, but she's a fast learner. We cooked all day yesterday. She had a bubble bath last night. Then I put her to bed. We started cooking again this morning."
Did Claire think she was a bad mother? The one thing Sydney could be proud of, and she was already messing it up. This place messed her up. She was never sure of who she was here.
"Have some coffee," Claire said. "Evenell said she was stopping by today to see you."
"Stay, Mommy. Watch what I can do."
"Get yourself together," she told herself. "Okay, honey. I'm not going anywhere." She went to the coffee pot and poured a cup. "How is Evenell?"
"She's fine.
She's anxious to see you."
"Have some lavender bread. Bay and I have been eating on that last loaf there. There's some herb butter, too."
Was Claire concerned about her? She'd thought a lot about Claire over the years. Mostly, they were thoughts of how adventurous Sydney was being and how poor, pitiful Claire could do nothing but stay at home in stupid Bascom. It was cruel, but it made her feel better because she'd always been jealous of Claire's comfort with who she was. Claire had been so happy to see her leave. Now she was worried about her, telling her to eat. Sydney tried to slice the bread slowly, but she was so hungry she ended up tearing most of it off. She spread some herb butter on the bread and closed her eyes. After her third slice, she started walking around the big kitchen. "This is impressive. I didn't know you could do this. Are these Grandma's recipes?"
"Some of them. The dandelion quiche and the lavender bread were hers."
"You never let me see them when I was little."
Claire turned from the counter and wiped her hands on her apron. "Listen, this is for a job in Hickory tomorrow. I've called two teenage girls who sometimes help me in the summer, but if you need some money, you can help me with it instead."
Sydney looked at her strangely. "You want me to help you?"
"Normally I can do this alone, but for bigger jobs I have to call people. Are you still going to be here tomorrow?"
"Of course I am," Sydney said.
"What? You don't believe me?"
"While you're here, I could use your help."
"I guess it's pretty obvious I need the money."
Claire smiled slightly, and Sydney liked that, the small connection it formed. Encouraged, she said congenially, "So, tell me about that Tyler guy."
Claire lowered her eyes and turned around.
"What about him?"
"Has he come by today?"
"He doesn't come by every day. Yesterday was the first time. He was bringing some apples that fell on his side of the fence."
"Did you bury them?"
"We always bury the apples that fall off the tree," Claire said, and Bay looked at Claire curiously. Sydney felt a sense of dread, wanting to hold off Bay knowing things for as long as possible. Sydney had traded any chance of Bay being considered normal for her safety. "How exactly did you tell a child, even a child like Bay, that?"
"So, Tyler," Sydney said before Bay could start asking questions, "is he single?"
"I don't know." Claire took the cookie sheet with the pansies on it and put it in a barely warm oven.
"Are you interested in him?"
"No," Claire answered vehemently, like a middle school girl.
"He belongs here," Bay said.
Claire turned to her. "It's this thing she does," Sydney said. "She has very firm opinions on where things belong."
"So that explains it. I asked her to get me a fork, and she went right to the drawer. When I asked her how she knew it was there, she said because that's where it belonged."
Claire looked at Bay thoughtfully.
"No," Sydney said. "It's not that. Don't force that on her."
"I wasn't," Claire said, and she seemed hurt. "And no one forced it on you. In fact, you ran as far away as you could from it, and no one stopped you. The whole town forced it on me. I tried to be normal, and no one would let me."
The pots hanging on the rack above the kitchen island began to sway anxiously, like an old woman wringing her hands.
Sydney watched them swing for a moment, then she took a deep breath. She forgot how sensitive the house could be, how floorboards vibrated when people got mad, how windows opened when everyone laughed at once.
"I'm sorry. I don't want to argue."
"What can I do to help?"
"Nothing right now."
"Bay, you can go too."
Claire untied Bay's apron and took it off her. "Do you have a black skirt and white blouse to wear to help me serve tomorrow?" she asked Sydney.
"I have a white blouse," Sydney said.
"You can borrow one of my skirts. Have you ever served before?"
"Yes."
"Is that what you did after you left? Waitress?"
Sydney ushered Bay out of the kitchen. Running, stealing, men. Those had never been Claire's areas of expertise. Sydney wasn't going to tell Claire about her past, not yet anyway. It wasn't something you shared with just anyone, not even your own sister, if you didn't think she'd understand.
"It was one of the things I did."
Later that afternoon, Sydney sat on the front porch while Bay did cartwheels in the yard. She saw Evenell come down the sidewalk and smiled. Evenell was in a blue running suit, that familiar large tote bag over her shoulder. Sydney used to love to guess what was in it. She hoped Bay would love that too. There weren't many high points to being a Waverly, but Evenell was definitely one of them. Evenell stopped to talk with Tyler next door, who was in his front yard, contemplating a big clump of grass clippings. He was bored. Sydney recognized the signs. His hair was longish, obviously to hold down the natural curl. That meant he had a creative nature he tried to control, and he was trying to control it by spending most of his day raking a big pile of cut grass from one side of his yard to the other. She couldn't imagine ever wanting another relationship with a man after David. But looking at Tyler, her heart felt sort of strange. She didn't want him, and he was clearly attracted to her sister, but the simple idea of a good man made her feel hopeful somehow. Maybe not for herself, but for other people, other women. Luckier women. As soon as Evenell left Tyler, Sydney hurried down the steps to meet her.
"Evenell," she said as she embraced the old lady. "Claire told me you were stopping by. Oh, it's good to see you. You look exactly the same."
"Still old. Still beautiful. What were you doing over there with Tyler?"
"Is that his name? He looked like he needed some lawn bags. Lucky I had some on me. He was real nice-like about it. Here's his phone number."
She handed Sydney a small piece of notebook paper. Sydney looked at the paper uncomfortably.
"Evenell, I don't want..."
Evenell patted Sydney's hand.
"Oh, honey, I don't know what you're supposed to do with it. I just knew I had to give it to you. I'm not trying to set you up."
Sydney laughed. What a relief.
"I have something else for you."
Evenell rooted around in her tote bag for a moment, then handed Sydney a shopping bag with the name of an upscale shop on the square. Sydney remembered it well. Girls at school whose parents had money bought things at Maxine's. Sydney used to work all summer in order to shop there, too, to look like she belonged. She opened the bag and brought out a beautiful blue silk shirt. It was about three sizes too big,
But she hadn't had something so decadent in a long time, not since she took all that money from her boyfriend, the car thief, and lived on it for a year. David had money, but he'd never been a gift-giver, never big on rewards, remorse, or apologies. Sydney sat on the steps and put the shirt to her nose and smelled that wonderful, wealthy scent of the shop. It smelled like fine paper and English perfume. It's so beautiful. Evenell lowered herself to the step beside Sydney and rummaged through her tote bag again.
I know it's too big. Here's the receipt. I was walking downtown this morning trying to find some nice male backsides. There was Maxine's, and I thought of you, and I knew I had to get you this shirt, this size.
Bay had approached and was shyly fingering the soft shirt in Sydney's hands. Evenell, this is my daughter, Bay.
Evenell chucked her chin, and Bay giggled. She looks just like your grandmother when she was young. Dark hair, blue eyes. She's got Waverly in her, that's for sure.
Sydney put an arm around Bay protectively, thinking, no, she doesn't. Strawberry Pop-Tarts are her favorite. Thank you for them.
Nice to know when things find a good purpose.
She patted Sydney's knee.
Where is Claire?
Busy in the kitchen, preparing for a luncheon.
Are you going to help her?
Yes. Evenell's sharp eyes were on her. Sydney had always loved Evenell. What child doesn't love an old lady who gives presents? But Claire always seemed to understand Evenell better.
Keep this in mind about Claire. She hates to ask for anything.
Bay ran back to the yard and did cartwheels for them, and they complimented her. Some time passed before Evenell said,
It's not an easy thing to do, ask for help. You were brave to come here. I'm proud of you.
Sydney met the old woman's eyes and knew that she knew. It was nearly 5 o'clock in the afternoon on Friday when Claire, Sydney, and Bay arrived home from catering the luncheon in Hickory. Bay had fallen asleep in the van. Sydney thought Claire might be peeved at having to take Bay along, but she didn't argue at all when Sydney said she didn't want to leave Bay with Evenell just yet. They'd only been in town 3 days. She wasn't leaving her daughter alone in a strange place. Claire had said, Of course not, she'll come with us. Just like that. Bay had enjoyed herself. The old ladies in the Amateur Botanists Association loved having her there, and every time Claire and Sydney came back from collecting plates or refreshing drinks, Bay had cleaned up the area or organized the coolers in that way she did, instinctively knowing where things were supposed to be. Sydney carried Bay upstairs and put her on her bed, then turned on one of the floor fans Claire had brought down from the attic because summer was filling the house, tightening it with heat. She changed into shorts and a T-shirt, thinking Claire was going to do the same before unloading the things from the van. But when Sydney went back downstairs, Claire had, in that short time, brought everything into the kitchen and was loading the dishwasher and filling the carafes with baking soda and hot water to soak. She was still in her blouse and skirt, the blue apron still over her clothes. I was going to help you, Sydney said. Claire looked surprised to find her there. I can do this. When I hire people, it's only to help serve. You can relax. I didn't know if you'd prefer a check or cash, so I went with cash. The envelope is there. She pointed to the kitchen table.
Sydney paused a moment.
She didn't understand. Wasn't it a good day? Didn't they work well together? The ladies at the luncheon loved Claire's food, and they complimented Sydney on what a nice job she did serving. Sydney had been nervous at first. Back when she waitressed, she used to steal from customers, not giving them back money from their checks. She would smile and flirt and try to smooth things over if they called her on it. And it never hurt that she was usually sleeping with the manager of the establishment, so he would always side with her if the complaint got that far. She could con with the best of them. She'd been worried that serving again might bring that time in her life back to her, might make her want it again. But it didn't. It felt good to work honestly and hard. It reminded her instead of what was probably the best time in her life, in Boise, when she worked at the salon. She remembered her aching feet and the cramps in her hands and the shorn hair that would get under her clothes and itch and poke her skin. She loved it all. But now Claire was saying she didn't need her help anymore. Sydney stood there while Claire continued to work. What was she supposed to do? She would go crazy if she couldn't do more than just help Claire out every once in a while. Claire didn't even let her do housework. Can I help you with anything? I've got this covered. This is my routine. Without another word, Sydney picked up the envelope and walked outside through the back to her Subaru. She leaned against it as she counted the money in the envelope. Claire had been generous. Sydney could go out and do something with this. That's probably what Claire expected her to do. Put some gas in the car. Go see someone. But she didn't have a tag, and she might get pulled over. And there was definitely no one she wanted to see again. Folding the envelope, she put it in the back pocket of her cutoffs. She didn't want to go back into the house and watch Claire work. So she walked around the driveway, kicking gravel, which Claire would probably smooth over later with a rake, putting everything back in order. She walked to the front yard and looked over to Tyler's house. His Jeep was parked on the curb. Impulsively, she crossed the yard and walked up his steps. She knocked on his door and waited, stuffing her hands deeper into her pockets the longer he took. Maybe he was asleep. That meant she had to go back home. But then she heard footsteps and smiled, taking her hands out of her pockets as he opened his door. He was wearing paint-splattered jeans and a T-shirt, looking sort of rumpled and forgetful, as if perpetually wondering where time was.